The history of CLEX, competitive local exchange carriers, is long, subject to the whim of regulators and fickle markets. What will it take for CLEX to thrive in the coming decade? What business strategies are they adopting? Do new technologies offer opportunities to compete or destroy their ability to differentiate? And what regulatory changes are coming that will change the ground rules yet again? PodTech.net brings you a breakfast panel sponsored by Metaswitch with John Lazar, Metaswitch CEO, Bill McCarthy of Cisco, and David Malfara with Remy Communications. The panel is moderated by Rich Williams, principal with Connect2 Communication. This is PodTech.net.
So, welcome. Thanks for coming. There's a lot happening in the CLEX market. There's consolidation, there's new services, there's new opportunities with new technologies. So one of the things I'm kind of curious what happens with the CLEX market, both as an equipment vendor serving that market and as a provider. Post-UNEP, what's the business model for the CLEX?
In terms of the CLEX opportunity to develop a business case, what you're seeing is an extension of requirements. You know, we begin to talk about emerging technologies such as IMS, and how IMS may play in the delivery of different services, whether they're real-time protocol services such as voice and video, or you know, storage area networking services, or background applications that need to be accommodated. Today's business needs all of that. And so if you look at the OSI reference model, really, CLEX need to become managed service providers and provide services at every layer.
I think you take for granted if you work in a larger company that you have access to Outlook and you can share that. And as a CLEX, to be able to touch an application like Unified Communications where you're involved with the small, medium-sized business owners' voice, their voicemail, or their ability to affect their email, you touch their two primary communication mechanisms, right?
Right.
There's an aspect of the CLEX business, I agree, where I think it's a move to being able to support applications more quickly and more fluidly, but their applications are very relevant to the user. It's moved way beyond just providing voice. Mm-hmm. And where that's accelerated.
So, with the model change, with UNEP going away, what opportunities do the services like WiMAX or Wi-Fi mean to you in terms of being able to deliver services?
UNEP was, there's statistics out that show the CLEX industry being, that for the first time the ILECs are taking market share from the CLECs. And I think it's a bit misleading because AT&T had a huge percentage of the UNEP customers.
Right.
I would guess that it's a little bit, it might be flat. I mean, regulatory pendulum swung a bit, you know, mm-hmm. It swings at different times. Maybe it's not as favorable for the CLEX industry right now. The UNEP market, I don't see being affected per se by Wi-Fi. I think of Wi-Fi as a different type of user. I think the UNEP market created an opportunity for companies like Metaswitch to come in and to move UNEP CLEX to facilities to begin supporting the resident from a VoIP perspective, and then with really a platform to continue to add applications in. That's the big transition.
I think it's certainly true that WiMAX is going to begin to have an impact there. I mean, we are seeing CLEX in various places looking at ways in which they can become independent in the last mile. And that's the crucial mm-hmm. point. The crucial point is not having to deal with a loop from anybody else, but being able to, if you're going to go facilities-based, to be able to do that end-to-end. I'm still slightly cautious about it because I think that WiMAX, the technology has improved dramatically, and I think the standards are settling down, and I think that the reliability and the technology is catching up with what we all thought it would do a couple of years ago, but it's still got a way to go. And it'll be interesting to see what happens there the next year or two.
You know, if you take a look at different access technologies, I don't think, and this will be a strange statement, that there's ever been more opportunity for a managed service provider than there is right now. WiMAX is part of it, okay? Ethernet First Mile Copper is part of it.
Fiber
is part of it. If you look at ways in which carriers, competitive carriers, have to access the customer, there really has never been a time like right now. What we need to do as carriers is normalize, you know, layer one facilities into a congruent layer two offering. And technologies like VPLS and HVPLS allow you to do that and to maintain quality of service. So I'm very excited about WiMAX coming online, but it is, you know, one way of reaching a customer. Now, you've got the most ubiquitous broadband access facility in the on the globe, and that's T1 or E1 if you're in those areas. And we certainly need to maintain access to unbundled network elements, and, you know, Verizon's forbearance filing and things like that are problematic, because what it shows is a failure of regulators and frankly legislators to understand what the basic concept of competition requires in terms of access to the end user. They're not going to let you dig up their driveway for another facility. You know, they allowed it for cable because you couldn't put video over twisted pair. But, you know, those days are over. But WiMAX allows you to avoid a significant amount of that. Ethernet First Mile Copper, the job for a carrier is to take all of those access methods and make sure that customers who are in various areas or customers with multiple locations can normalize the way in which they use the network to be able to achieve their goals.
I think Dev's point about voice quality is incredibly important, and I would take it even slightly further. I mean, you could even say it's about service quality. We did a webinar on Crystals back in July, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Where we had, I think well over 100 of our customers attended, and we asked them which feature or which thing on our roadmap they would most like to see over the next year or two. And we gave them a reasonably long laundry list. And what came back really, really strongly was additional tools for voice quality monitoring as being the most important thing. And I think, as particularly with the IMS promise of being able to deploy a variety of different integrated applications, which are multimedia, the real challenge for service providers, and I think this is where CLEX can differentiate themselves, is being able to put as David says, layered networks together where you can actually control that quality and provide a better experience for users. So I think that's a big opportunity for a CLEC with a very focused, good set of integrated services which can then be higher quality than can be provided by a large behemoth like AT&T.
I think that CLECs, to the extent they had the support of residential services, would be an incremental cost to their predominant core focus on enterprise. I think you'll see penetration that way. But I, you know, in multiple dwelling units and things of that sort. I don't believe you'll see CLECs servicing single family dwellings because the mindset, frankly, of the residential customers to a large extent are willing to put up with quality disparities because of the benefit of price at the low end. Well, if you're a CLEC, you're building a quality network, and you know what you're building, they don't necessarily want. They're looking at price. Today, I don't think we face many challenges other than deployment and execution. We use, you know, specifically Remy, uses Riverstone technology, 15,000 series product, which Riverstone was just bought by Lucent. You know, that is a pretty awesome unit, all due respect, I'm sure Cisco has has significant offerings there as well. But we believe that VPLS as a technology and HVPLS really is going to be an emerging driver of end-to-end quality of service.
Of your customer base that are actually rural or independent LECs doing edge-out CLEC opportunities, are any of them thinking about using UNIP mechanisms? I'm not finding that most people are culturally averse to that and simply are saying it's got to be T1 or above. And are you seeing any change in that?
In general, no, I would agree with that. I mean, almost all of them are trying to do it via different means. You know, whether that's a where there's some sort of focus build out in a neighboring region where they control the network themselves, or as you said, just putting T1s back. There's a couple of customers doing UNIL where they drop a broadband loop carrier in and then they just backhaul the network from the broadband loop carrier. And that happens quite a lot. But UNIP, no. I mean, I think that's gone.
I've seen an emergence over the last 2 years of planned communities where the developer themselves or the municipality is coming in and providing not only access but providing all the services. And that seems to be gaining momentum to capture the user. I was watching my wife Saturday night. She's getting her counseling, her degree, her master's in counseling. She wants to be the most highly educated housewife there is. She is her second master's. So, but she was completing her test on Saturday night because she had put it off for a little while online, watching the St. Louis Cardinals at the same time, had a chat room open, which was allowed by her professor with other students, and then was looking at multiple email and documents. And that suggests that, you know, here's my wife who probably, by and large, doesn't think of herself as a technologist, but in terms of what she wants to experience from the network, there's a lot. You know, a few years ago, if we had talked about that scenario, we would have been overwhelmed by what ability do we have to deliver all of that. Now it's just an assumption. So there's still a pretty interesting market for the residential user.
So just a follow-up question for David on the sort of extension of business, primary business customer service into the residential space. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I think you're probably not talking about remote workers, professional users that are actually linked to the main account where the customer says, oh, by the way, I've got three guys that are remote sales offices.
With that, we actually accommodate as part of our service. We don't consider that to be residential. Those are road warriors and telecommuters. In Remy's case, we're looking at emerging technology as it comes out. Have you seen these yet? The WIP 330. Okay, it's a great little device from Cisco and Linksys.
Is that
dual mode Wi-Fi? No, it's just Wi-Fi, 802.11g, and it works like a champ. We haven't got wireless in here, so I'm not registered to my Metaswitch call agent here, but I am outside this room. Why this is important is because if you have executives who wander around their office using Metaswitch capability with the registered SIP device and the attendant feature, some of the capability that they have in their UC9000 IMS platform, we're able to provide extended services to customers. And some of those do include telecommuter and road warrior services for both voice and data. We'll take data and we'll bring that into the network using a layer 3 VPN. And then map that directly to a VPLS instance to give them access to the VLANs that they have corporate-wise.
So I think there's a breakdown between concept of residential versus business, because there's such a bleed now. And I think the thing that you do see is you see more and more people working at home or working at home at least a couple of days a week. And over time, that means that residential users begin to expect a different package of services from what they would have expected maybe 5 years ago, which is the point you're making.
Oh yeah, much quicker. I mean, the concept of nanny cam. Now we think about if if somebody rings the doorbell, you get a screen pop, and you're upstairs in your office, and you can just tell the UPS guy to just drop the package. But what if you have it, now you have that same screen pop on your mobile device, whatever it is, Trio or otherwise, and it's your son who's home a little bit early from school, and you're like, hey, get inside and get after your homework, and you might be on the other side of the country. I think there's an acceleration in interest for those type of experiences and applications, a rapid acceleration. YouTube taught us a lot, if you ask me. Yeah. I mean, that's a year ago. I'm not sure how many of us were familiar, and yet there's $1.6 billion valuation really for a real creative content player. I don't know if valuation's fair, but if I worked there, I think it would be.
you could argue about the creative content from the bits I've seen.
I had this great idea. That I think is.
But it's, you know, isn't that interesting how much content? I mean, that's a fascinating transition. So
the key is in having an infrastructure where you can respond quickly and flexibly and cheaply, and you can try things quickly. And if they don't work, you can pull them and try something else.
And then monetizing.
Exactly. So I think that's really the environment in which we live, because we don't know what people are going to do, and we certainly don't know what they're going to want to pay for.
Gary, if I could just follow up John's answer with a slant toward enterprise. You know, you face the same thing there as far as the applications are concerned. You know, I've been in telecom for 30 years. We're still looking for the killer app, right? The problem is that that killer app is different depending upon who the user is and at any certain time. So what I'm looking for and what Remy is pushing all of its vendors for in the IMS space is to reach a little bit further and come up with a GUI-based service creation environment that drives the IMS to be able to accommodate the applications on a drag-and-drop basis that the customer wants. And I really think that, you know, a customer-oriented service creation environment is the killer app, because at that point, you've mobilized the customer to be able to create products and services that they need on a dynamic basis, and you've built a network that has the ability to respond to those differences in performance techniques. Now, we talk about quality of service almost in terms of, you know, a prioritization scheme. You know, what is more important than others? You know, in terms of applications, it isn't that way at all, as you well know. You know, it is defining proper network performance parameters to support the information flow that we're discussing or that's at hand. So, you know, if it's voice, it's low jitter, low latency, low loss. If it's a storage area network application, we're talking about absolutely assured forwarding, zero packet loss, and we don't care so much about jitter and latency. But we need large frame support, things of that sort. So it's building.
We also need to be able to find out quickly when things go wrong.
Yeah.
That's the really, really difficult part in these distributed networks.
Yeah.
It's working out which node in the network is the one that's actually causing the bottleneck. It's having visibility into that.
Right. And the operational support systems to be able to provision it on a dynamic basis as well. 3 years from now, I would like to be able to make available to my enterprise customers a defined set, a library of little applets that they can use on a GUI interface to build IMS applications, and to have those little applets behind the scenes control through interfaces to my network elements, the network environment to be able to create that. You know, it's so easy, frankly, if you look at it really in a, you know, in a mode in which you're providing bundled service to enterprise customers. So you're not really differentiating. Remy, for instance, provides a full QoS-centric network interconnection. When you buy what's called Remy Dedicated Interconnection and Access Service. So that's a layer 2 QoS-aware interconnection. Then we give the customer at each location the ability to build 4,094 VLANs within, you know, that location. And frankly, the ability to do that and to segregate and differentiate is based on their marking of packets, you know, because within REMI's network, there is no QoS issue. You know, we've got enough bandwidth to do everything. But the fact of the matter is that the bottleneck is at the access and the egress point. So the customer needs to be in control of the prioritization of information flows there. They also need to be in control of the catalog of services that they need. So I can take my Metaswitch UC9000 and I can package different bundles of service that allow them on a non-usage sensitive but a subscription basis to really take advantage of all the capabilities that they need, but only, you know, buy the packages that they need as well. So it really is a, you know, charge code for a single unit as opposed to keeping track of packets, you know, which is something none of us want to do. Let me tell you a story. We have a bank who spends over $100,000 a month, okay, on a frame relay network. Carrier will go unnamed, okay? But the fact of the matter is they wanted to roll out an application to be able to process consumer loans faster at their branches, okay? Couldn't do it. They spent over $200,000 to build this application. They couldn't roll it out because there was no way they could prioritize that application over simple but necessary web browsing and other things that they were using the frame relay network for, okay? They did a cost analysis of deploying REMI with, you know, QoS-aware VLAN capability in all of their branch offices, came away with a price of around $36,000 a month to do that.
Versus
over $100,000. Now, the problem that they ran into right away was in their initial analysis, you know, because REMI says you need broadband capability at each location in order to accomplish this. They said, well, some of our locations just aren't large enough to accommodate that. I said, you know what, sit back and look at the possibility that that might be the reason that they're small. You know, that they haven't got access to the tools and capabilities that the larger branches have. So what you need to do is take your total telecom spend, divide it by the number of offices that you have, and that's your target on a per office basis for expenditures. Once they move to that mindset, they found out they were going to save enormous amounts of money anyway. I think in most cases, what this provides to them is a disciplined approach of ordering information flows in a way that you can accomplish more with the same facilities. If you think about it, a best effort internet access facility costs about the same as a REMI dedicated interconnection access facility. So to be able to look at what your information flows are in your enterprise and to accommodate the dynamic changes in capacity and performance that each of those applications represent is of significant value. So, on the residential side, not so sure. Yeah.
Just asking like a slightly harder question, but it's a question I have to ask. Application means a different thing to different people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a good amount of thinking in the industry that the danger for all of us in the communication space is that the value of the applications is really coming from stuff that I'm running as an enterprise app on my PC or my servers. And I've got mobile, and those are all sort of closed gardens. We don't necessarily always have transparent access to them. Plus, I mean, it's not just... It's not that VLANs aren't important, they are. And clearly, I can understand how there's a revenue model for what you want to do. Mm-hmm. But there's this other question of, we don't want just the revenue we've currently got, that we can increase a little bit from being more flexible with the GUIs, because this is spot on, it's perfect vision. Somehow we've got to figure out a way to hook into the enterprise software vendors of the world, the PeopleSofts and the Googles and everything else, because to create an IMS this application, the stuff that's interesting to me is, I'm going to do a drag and drop here, and then use your GUI to create an application.
Yeah.
It might be an application way the hell up here, not...
Gary, that's absolutely correct, and that's why Remy is working right now with third-party software development companies to do that. Because we expect to have our network become the facilitator for these applications. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, different, even if you think your software development group is you know, Einstein-ish, you know, in terms of what they can do, they're going to necessarily bias toward a certain industry or a certain sector or whatever it is. There are thousands of those out there. So, you know, opening up a service creation environment or an accommodation of third-party applications to hit different industry sectors and then to, you know, publish or raise the visibility of those applications as being network-centric in Remy's network, we think that's worthwhile.
So your model is actually not sort of banging down the doors and forcing a software developer to write code for you. It's saying, I'm open, come write code for
me. Exactly.
That's what you want, what you do. It's saying, here's the API, go do it.
We're carriers, you know,
so
we're carriers.
And that's sort of, to get back to what you're saying, this is a different approach, I think, of what I was asking before. Is that in that scenario, then, your extra revenue comes from customer paying more to buy more facilities?
Certainly. I mean, some of the applications, you have to realize that the third-party developer comes up with are most efficiently deployed within our network. Okay, so right in our points of presence, right in our edge devices even, you know, out toward the customer. So, you know, we can provide a home for those applications and we don't necessarily have to write them.
Those can be part of your managed service portfolio then?
Yes, and we go further with that as well, because Remy has Remy professional services that will actually go in and assist an enterprise in looking at their business operations and defining areas within which we feel applications that are developed can apply.
And the way I sort of think about it is if you, and as David said a few minutes ago, you can imagine a scenario in 2 or 3 years' time where There is an environment where you have fragments of applets or applets themselves, which are target, you know, which provide specific services like a Find Me, Follow Me service or a Click to Dial service or an integration with a mobile service, whatever it is. And what you're allowing your enterprise customers to do, even very, very small businesses, they may have a portal or an application specific to their business. And suddenly they think, what I really need is I need this particular part of that application to be Find Me, Follow Me enabled, or I've got people in the room more than I expected. But what they can do is literally just take that applet and integrate it, and they get all of the backend provisioning, they get the billing just happens, etc., etc.
Okay.
And I think that's what we're talking about. I mean, that's the vision. Now that's hard to do, but I mean, it's certainly possible, Chris.
Yeah.
I do see everything blending. You know, I think in terms of almost an e-commerce portal, enabling applications, and now we're speaking in a language that really does kind of flip back to the B2B, B2C days of, you know, that what's old again, or how's that saying, what's new is old again?
Yeah,
everything old is new again.
But so there are elements of it in place. I think there's a number of things that have happened. One is, we do have a generation of application developers who understand SOAP and XML, and they understand it really well.
Yeah.
And if you look at the way in which people are approaching IMS applications, they're all SOAP and XML based. So there is absolutely a high-level framework where somebody can just take a SOAP and XML fragment and they can pull it in. They know how it works, they know how to come together. So that's one. The other one is that just within the sort of voice and multimedia thing, it is absolutely true that SIP has so many different variants and so many different extra packages that make it difficult to work with. But it's also true that it is becoming increasingly ubiquitous in those environments. I mean, we've got customers who are just using Metaswitch SIP interfaces, just writing the applications, they just do them. We don't even know that they're doing them. So that basic multimedia protocol glue with the associated interfaces is becoming baked more baked than it was. We've got a way to go, but I mean, that's getting there. And the other piece is subscriber management. So if you look at, an absolutely critical part of this is that that an application writer's got to be able to get access to the same subscriber information as some other third party. I mean, you have to have shared subscriber information. And again, with IMS, we're beginning to see, if not the HSS develop, we're certainly beginning to see the interfaces develop where there are clear schemas for accessing that subscriber information.
Yeah,
so I think the building blocks are starting to happen.
Yeah, I think that you know, from Cisco's perspective, we think that the network becomes the facilitation of all of this. And so I would say our greater emphasis is certainly not around individualized applications, it's the facilitation of delivering those. Our view is also that there are applications that can reside in the network, there are applications that are going to reside in other places, but the question is, and I think John spoke to it well, is how efficiently can you blend those, and then can you capture them from a back office standpoint and really monetize it and bill for those. Our view, our vision is we want to be in a place where we're facilitating that and facilitating it exceptionally well. And so a lot of our investment today and a lot of our messaging is around being able to facilitate the experience that not only individual users would want, but also with the experience that we think, you know, large enterprise, small and medium-sized business all would like to have too. Our investment and our vision around that is crystal clear. The path to getting that accomplished is there's a lot of hard work involved. And there's a lot of partnership. I mean, Cisco and Metaswitch have built a wonderful partnership, in my opinion, John. And I think the world ahead is probably has interdependencies.
We want to thank everyone for coming. It's certainly a topic that I think is on everyone's minds, and I think your questions are spot on what everyone's wondering is going to happen to the market. I want to thank the panelists for taking the time to be here this morning. Feel free to mingle and ask questions independently.
Rich Williams, principal with Connect2 Communication. At a breakfast panel sponsored by Metaswitch at the World Center Marriott in Orlando, Florida. This is podtech.net.